Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. The smiling face of a still boyish-looking Michael J. Fox graces the cover of the April-May 2017 AARP magazine. He is certainly known for his acting work, but he is increasingly well-known as a fierce advocate in the search to find cures for Parkinson's disease, which he has had for 26 years. I'm inspired by his work and appreciate the creative ways his foundation tackle helping those living now with Parkinson's and hope to find cures for the future. My niece's fiancé spent many months in 2015 as part of the Tour de Fox. This was a fundraising venture, but also a mental and physical booster for the Parkinson's community. Over 3 months, the team scaled the highest peak in each of the lower 48 United States. At each mountain, the Tour de Fox encouraged local community with Parkinson's to participate in the climb. It was a fabulous venture, and many inspiring stories came out of this journey. Today we're going to read an article that is a little clunky in its format. It's written as the answer to the question, why is Michael J. Fox still smiling? And after that, we will have time to read some other articles about Parkinson's treatment and research. And this is titled, The Kid is All Right, written by Andrew Corsello. The question, just why exactly is Michael J. Fox still smiling 26 years after his Parkinson's diagnosis? Answer number one. It's hilarious when other people think, poor Michael. Has any American in public life confounded expectations more than Michael J. Fox? Even Fox is surprised to find himself where he is today, alive and well enough, and at this moment in jeans and a baggy t-shirt, comfortably ensconced on an old leather couch near his Great Dane mix, Gus, who's splayed and snoring on a well-worn rug in an office that Fox keeps in the New York apartment building where he lives. He's also surprised to find himself so mentally hale, as sharp, earnest, open, and golly gee as when he first came out of our cathode trinitrons and into our living rooms as Alex P. Keaton in the early 1980s. At 55, the father of four is happily married to his first and only wife, the actress Tracy Pollan. And against all odds, Fox has continued to act, earning his 18th Emmy nomination last year for his role as the Machiavellian lawyer Lewis Canning on The Good Wife. His eponymous foundation, meanwhile, has funded more than $700 million for research into Parkinson's disease. If anyone had predicted any of this back when, well, of course, nobody did, because people, doctors in fact, told Fox more than 2.5 decades ago that he had about 10 years left and not all of them good. You sure you want the truth? Fox asks, raising his right arm and beholding the hand as it flutters about, as if in pursuit of some irksome flying pest. The truth is that on most days there comes a point where I literally can't stop laughing at my own symptoms. He clasps his arm to his chest, restricting the renegade hand to a fitful scratching motion. Just the other morning, I come into the kitchen. Oh, good, coffee. I'm going to get some. No, wait. I'm going to get some for Tracy, who's at the table with the paper. I pour a cup, a little trouble there. Then I put both hands around the cup. She's watching. Can I get that for you, dear? Nah, I got it. Then I begin this trek across the kitchen. It starts off bad, only gets worse. Hot Java's sloshing into my hands onto the floor. Fox begins to raise the volume and pitch of his voice to convey his own teetering ineptitude and denial. And Tracy's watching calmly, going, darling, why don't you, emphatic expletive, let me get it. I'm almost there, babe. Of course, by the time I reach the table, the cup's all but empty. Here's your coffee, dear. Enjoy. A great yuck, like a great melody, tends to defy reason. But when I ask Fox if he can explain why this bit of slapstick so thoroughly slays him, he nails it. There's the fact that it's 7 in the morning, and this is how we begin our day, the right way. But the thing that makes it hilarious to me is when I think of someone else watching all this and thinking, poor Michael can't even get the coffee. It's so sad. After I made my diagnosis public back in 1998, I began to realize that Parkinson's gives you two things to reckon with, Fox explains. You deal with the condition, and you deal with people's perception of the condition. It was easy for me to tune in to the way other people were looking into my eyes and seeing their own fear reflected back. I'd assure them that I'm doing great, because I was. After a while, the disconnect between the way I felt and the dread people were projecting just seemed, you know, funny. Answer number two. His wife said, hold my hand and we'll get over that. Michael J. Fox has always looked at least a decade younger than his age, and he's still got that hashtag boyish charm, as those who work at the Michael J. Fox Foundation put it. Yes, the Parkinson's has etched some age into his face, but it's the darndest thing, the cluttery skid-and-slide elocution that comes with his condition actually amplifies his boyishness. At times, he seems like a very bright young man whose mind goes far faster than his jaw, the words emerging bumper to bumper at 80 miles per hour and frequently crashing into the back of his teeth in spectacular fashion. Fox has, of course, made a career of playing youthful characters in a journey that is universally known. Well, almost. My youngest, Esme, now 15, the only one of his children who's still at home, has been getting into crosswords. A few days ago, one of the clues was Michael's role in Family Ties. I got all excited and said, you know that? She said, what, is that you? Yeah, that was me. With a role in Family Ties? Young Republican? Ronald Reagan's favorite show? She still drew a blank. So I told her, Alex? A-L-E-X? She asked, who's Alex? Kids these days. Esme and the rest of us all remember Fox's next big gig as Marty McFly in the Back to the Future trilogy, which made him the boy next door, and his role as Deputy New York Mayor Mike Flaherty in Spin City, which earned him 4 consecutive Emmy nominations, including 1 win. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 1991, the same year Magic Johnson announced he had tested positive for HIV. Though the men and their conditions couldn't be more different, their announcements made years apart resonated in devastating ways. Both were ageless, iconically sunny personalities. Skip ahead to 2017. In both cases, the science has come so far, so fast, in no small part because of each man, that it's easy to forget that each, at the time of his coming out, seemed to be announcing his own imminent death. Fox, for his part, ascribes his sanity and emotional salvation to his wife. Tracy wasn't sentimental or romantic about it at all, he says. No terror, no big windy exultation. He clutches at the word, discards it. Exposition. This is a Parkinson's thing, an exaggerated version of the tip-of-the-tongue stutters to which all of us are prone. The first time or two Fox does this in your presence, you're tempted to rush in and fill the vacuum. But slowly it dawns on you that he's not the one you're trying to help. He meant to say that his wife showed no exhibition of grief and fear. But Fox, he's good with it. He knows the word he wants is waiting for him and that they'll meet up soon enough. In the meantime, he seems to regard the exaltation and exposition as practical jokers photobombing the picture he's trying to create. Whew, that was close, he says, laughing. 2 strikes, but then I hit it out of the park with that exhibition, huh? So he continues, no exhibition of grief and fear. Tracy was just like, you've got a stone in your shoe. We'll do what we can until you can get it out. In the meantime, if you limp with the stone, that's all right. You can hold my hand and we'll get over that. Answer number 3, Muhammad Ali would not permit surrender. The news of Fox's demise as a human being and an actor was premature. 13 of his 18 Emmy nominations and 5 of his 9 Golden Globe nominations came after his diagnosis. Impressive stuff, though perhaps not so much as the evolving way he's dealt with the reality of his disease. The first motivator came immediately after he revealed his condition, when he started hearing from other Parkinson's patients. Muhammad Ali, who suffered from Parkinson's syndrome for 32 years before his death last June, called me at home, Fox says. And in this raspy, paper-thin voice, he said, Michael, now that you're in it, we'll win this fight. What could I say? Sitting there all alone, listening to Muhammad Ali, this giant, I was welling up, almost openly weeping. Another motivator was the feedback generated by Fox's public embrace of his condition, a kind of self-amplifying echo chamber of positivity that became a blueprint for the success of his foundation. A funny thing happened, Fox recalls. Doctors reached out to me, and I reached out to doctors. More important, the Parkinson's community reached out to me, and I immediately felt better, just empowered, knowing there were people who understood what I was going through. It was also empowering for physicians, specialists, and researchers I began meeting all over the country. They'd never had a patient coming in and saying, "Hey, what's in your Petri dish?" They'd go, "You really want to know?" "Hell yeah, I wanted to know." "Then I'm going to show you." And so we'd be standing there both thinking, the stuff in that dish could affect me. There was a primal satisfaction to that. Patient participation, patients piloting their own care instead of passively accepting a treatment regimen, is now taken for granted. But it didn't take hold until Fox's foundation got into the game in 2000, and it springs from Fox's personality. Remarkably, neuroscience has caught up to and validated the medical efficacy of his instincts to stay positive. His message is so simple it gets forgotten. The people living with the disease are the experts, says Holly Teichholz, head of communications at the Fox Foundation. Fox has also pushed to use technology to amplify patients' voices. This spring, the foundation launched Fox Insight, foxinsight.org, a virtual tool that walks anyone, with or without Parkinson's, through a set of clinical questions, then follows up over months and years. The idea is to trace the disease's long, mysterious genesis, accounting for genetic and environmental factors, with an eye toward identifying a biological marker and a predictive test. Though the foundation's work may be at risk with the sea changes happening in Washington, Fox takes any potential setbacks as an impetus to work harder. On average, Parkinson's patients in this country spend $12,000 to $17,000 a year out of pocket, he recites. 80% of Parkinson's patients are on Medicare, which is why Fox and some 200 grassroots community members representing 43 states traveled to Washington in February to visit Capitol Hill. If the Affordable Care Act and even Medicare come under the knife, that's not political, Fox says. That's our lives. Answer number four, though acting is different, it's still a blast. Fox himself is something of a medical anomaly. After a decade or so, most Parkinson's patients become less responsive to the synthetic dopamine that can help regulate the condition's characteristic tremors. But he's still responsive and has found a mix of drugs that has him feeling better than he did 10 years ago, which is why he's been able to extend his working career far beyond the decade he was allotted in 1991. The Michael J. Fox Show finished its two-year run in 2014. The Good Wife ended in 2016. Fox also voiced the title character, a robot dog, in last year's Archie. "My visible symptoms are distracting, but none of them hurt," Fox says, shrugging. "The only real pain I get is in my feet, which sometimes shuffle and curl up in cramps when I'm sleeping, which is why I keep a very stiff pair of shoes on the floor next to my bed." Those symptoms have required a metamorphosis of Fox's acting in the past 15 years, both in terms of the way he experiences his craft and in the kind of performances he has delivered. Before Parkinson's, Fox was a highly studied actor who approached his work like an engineer, crossing T's, dotting I's, and nailing every take. He was a bankable talent who's always satisfied, although he didn't always surprise. The acting he's done since his diagnosis has had edge, has put you on edge, because you don't know what you're getting with Dwight, the angry wheelchair-using ex-athlete romancing the ex-wife of Dennis Leary's character in Rescue Me, or the good wife's manipulative Lewis Canning. There's something dark, predatory, and elusive about the performances. You lose track of the fact that you're watching Michael J. Fox. I no longer have my stuff, the big bag of tricks I relied on in the past, Fox admits. I can't do a double take anymore, for one. I'm more into the moment of what I'm doing because I can't have any expectations. I'm forced to approach every take as a whole new thing. My experience of acting has become much more still and quiet and surprising to me. I think I've been given a power of observation that is not self-observation, which is what acting should be. Though still and quiet have recently earned him critical kudos, don't people still yell McFly at him on the street? Fox just shakes his head and smiles at the question. They've never stopped. And his fifth answer? Who doesn't smile around their best friend? And that is from AARP Magazine of April, May 2017. Now we have Singing Improves Parkinson's Symptoms and Quality of Life, written by Tim Newman and published on April 18, 2016. Parkinson's disease is a degenerative disorder of the central nervous system, affecting an estimated 1 million Americans. A study suggests group singing appears to relieve some of the symptoms not currently targeted by existing treatments. The symptoms of Parkinson's include tremor, particularly in the hands, arms, legs, face, and jaw. It causes a slowness in movement, problems with balance, and emotional changes. These symptoms are often the prime focus of research, but they are not the only life-changing difficulties that Parkinson's disease presents. Impairments in breathing and voice are also substantial hurdles that cause a significant drop in quality of life. Voice impairments impact 60 to 80% of Parkinson's patients. Their voice can become monotone and display less variety in volume. There may also be a reduced vocal intensity and pitch and a harsh, breathy voice. Standard Parkinson's treatments do not target these aspects with the same level of success as motor symptoms. Deep brain stimulation of the subthalamic nucleus, which relieves many of Parkinson's classic symptoms, can in fact make voice alterations worse. Although there are various interventions designed to improve voice and breathing deficits, they tend to address overall quality of life, and as symptoms progress, dropout rates of these therapies are often high. This means that even the most beneficial therapies do not always have the opportunity to take full effect. Researchers at Iowa State University, led by Elizabeth Stegemoeller, set out to investigate whether group singing could help relieve some of the voice symptoms of Parkinson's disease and, at the same time, increase quality of life and whole health measures. Singing is a culturally universal pastime that improves bonding and produces a sense of belonging that traditional therapies often cannot match. Additionally, singing can be considered an elongated type of speech with particular emphasis on rhythm, tempo, tonal changes, and respiratory control. Parkinson's therapy involving singing has been trialed in previous studies, but findings have been mixed. This study is the first to test whether improvements in symptoms can be affected by dosage. In other words, can two singing sessions a week be more effective than one? The trial consisted of 27 Parkinson's patients who attended group singing sessions either once or twice a week. Before and after the 8-week trial, swallowing measures and voice measures such as the patient's vocal range and how long they could hold a note were recorded. Therapy sessions involved vocal exercises, followed by renditions of popular songs, including You Are My Sunshine and Show Me the Way to Go Home. The researchers found that after 2 months of singing, there were significant improvements in pitch duration, vocal loudness, and swallow control. Both groups one session per week and twice per week, demonstrated a significant improvement in maximum inspiratory and expiratory pressure, as well as phonation time. Other voice measures improved, but not to a statistically significant degree. Importantly, questionnaires that assessed the impact of voice changes on their quality of life and their overall quality of life showed significant improvements. Interestingly, there were no differences between the two groups. Both benefited equally. Stegemoller says, with people who have Parkinson's disease, what you're hoping for is maintaining these skills, because it's a progressive disease. If we can improve the voice, then maybe there's hope to maintain that function a little bit longer. This research was just a pilot, and the team plans to expand the investigation once funding has been secured. Medical News Today asked Stegemoller about the type of study she would conduct in a perfect world. Her aim is to produce a large-scale project measuring more parameters, including voice, swallow, respiratory, quality of life, social network, depression, and anxiety. She continues, I would also like to examine the associated brain changes. Finally, I would like to develop methods to bring this music therapy-led intervention to as many persons with Parkinson's disease as possible. Stegemoller has a passion for music, how the brain responds to it, and its use in therapy. It is a fascinating topic that spans scientific fields as diverse as human evolution, sociology, psychology, endocrinology, and neuroscience. MNT asked Stegemoller how she thinks singing might have evolved in human culture. And she said, I believe that music evolved as an initial method of communication before formal language was developed. It seems oddly satisfying that a primal social activity like singing might be used to treat such an intractable disorder that modern medical science is still battling against. Stegemoller says, something like singing is not only addressing the physical needs, but also the social and emotional aspect. MNT recently covered research showing that attending a music concert reduces levels of stress hormones. And we have time, most likely, for mighty morphed brain cells cure Parkinson's in mice, but human trials still far off. And this is written for Stat News by Sharon Begley and published on April 10th, 2017. Mice that walk straight and fluidly don't usually make scientists exult, but these did. The lab rodents all had a mouse version of Parkinson's disease and only weeks before had barely been able to lurch and shuffle around their cages. Using a trick from stem cell science, researchers managed to restore the kind of brain cells whose death causes Parkinson's, and the mice walked almost normally. The same technique turned human brain cells growing in a lab dish into the dopamine-producing neurons that are AWOL in Parkinson's, scientists at Sweden's Karolinska Institute reported on Monday in Nature Biotechnology. Success in lab mice and human cells is many difficult steps away from success in patients. The study nevertheless injected new life into a promising approach to Parkinson's that has suffered setback after setback. Replacing the dopamine neurons that are lost in the disease, crippling movement, and eventually impairing mental function. This is not going to happen in 5 years or possibly even 10, but I'm excited about the potential of this kind of cell replacement therapy, said James Beck, chief scientific officer of the Parkinson's Foundation, which was not involved in the study. It could really give life back to someone with Parkinson's disease. There is no cure for Parkinson's, a neurodegenerative disease that affects an estimated 10 million people worldwide, most notably prominent actor Michael J. Fox. Drugs that enable the brain to make dopamine help only somewhat, often causing movement abnormalities called dyskinesia, as well as bizarre side effects such as a compulsion to gamble. They do nothing to stop the neurodegeneration. Rather than replacing the missing dopamine, scientists led by Karolinska's Ernest Arenas tried to replace dopamine neurons, but not in the way that researchers have been trying since the late 1980s. In that approach, scientists obtained tissue containing dopamine neurons from first trimester aborted fetuses and implanted it into patients' brains. Although a 2001 clinical trial found that the transplants partly alleviated the rigidity and tremors of Parkinson's, the procedure caused serious dyskinesia in about 20% of patients, Beck said. More problematic is that fetal tissue raises ethical concerns and is in short supply. It was clear that usable fragments of brain tissue were extremely difficult to recover, said Dr. Kurt Fried of the University of Colorado, who pioneered that work. Instead, several labs have therefore used stem cells to produce dopamine neurons in dishes. Transplanted into the brains of lab rats with Parkinson's, the neurons reduced rigidity, tremor, and other symptoms. Human studies are expected to begin in the U.S. and Japan this year or next, Beck said. In the Karolinska approach, there is no need to search for donor cells and no cell transplantation or need for immunosuppression to prevent rejection, Arenas told Stat. Instead, he and his team exploited one of the most startling recent discoveries in cell biology, that certain molecules can cause one kind of specialized cell, such as a skin cell, to pull a Benjamin Button, aging in reverse until they become like the embryonic cells called stem cells. Those can be induced to morph into any kind of cell, heart, skin, muscle, and more, in the body. Arenas and his team filled harmless lentiviruses with a cocktail of four such molecules. Injected into the brains of mice with Parkinson's-like damage, the viruses infected plentiful brain cells called astrocytes. The brain's support cells, astrocytes, perform jobs like controlling blood flow. The viruses also infected other kinds of cells, but their payload was designed to work only in astrocytes and apparently caused no harm to the other cells. The molecules called transcription factors reprogrammed some of the astrocytes to become dopamine neurons, which were first detected 3 weeks later in the mouse brains. The dopamine neurons were abundant 15 weeks later, an indication that after changing into dopamine neurons, the astrocytes stayed changed. 5 weeks after receiving the injections, the mice, which used to have Parkinson's-like gait abnormalities, walked as well as healthy mice. That suggests that direct reprogramming of brain cells has the potential to become a novel therapeutic approach for Parkinson's, Arenas told Stat. There we leave it. Thank you for tuning into Sound Body today, and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.